Lynette Henderson, and I'm going to be talking today about the resources for research teams that we have here at the Vanderbilt Kennedy Center. And we're going to try and do an introduction to the Kennedy Center. It's a lot like the sorts of presentations that I'm going to do out at different events to give people the big picture. Because sometimes we get so focused on our own particular lab or where we fit, what we're working on, it's hard for us to see the big picture. And so we're going to spend some time on that. I want to touch on the idea of family-centered research approach, how important that is to us here, and provide you with some resources for that. We're also going to review some of the services and resources that we have to offer, and then focus a little bit more on recruitment and the kinds of things that the recruitment corps can help you with. So that's our plan for today. If you have questions, feel free to interrupt me. We've got plenty of time, and I'm happy to do that. Again, if you need to get up and leave, wander around a bit more, help yourself. So, when we're starting out in the community, I made a big point of saying that the Vanderbilt Kennedy Center is here to make an impact on society, and that we want to do that through multi-level partnerships, usually involving whoever I'm talking with, through best practices and through empowering the community. And one of the ways that we empower the community is letting them know how we can help. Well, our mission is to improve the quality of life of children, adolescents, and adults with disorders of thinking, learning, perception, communication, mood, and emotion caused by disruption of typical development. Well, if you look at that list, that's pretty much everything that people do except for physical health, right? So we have a very broad mission, and so we are able to meet a lot of needs. The Vanderbilt Kennedy Center was begun in 1965 as a result of a visit to the Peabody campus from John F. Kennedy. It was one of the first two nationally designated developmental disabilities research centers. We've been continuously funded as a research center since 1965. We're one of 22 Unis Kennedy Schreiber Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Research Centers. And in addition, we are one of 64 University Centers for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities, one of two in Tennessee. Just to go over a little bit of our history, for more than 40 years, we've been accomplishing a lot of important things here. I just want to give you a sense of the importance of what you're doing. For example, during that first important visit that Kennedy made, there was also a lot of discussion around Susan Gray's work and working with families in their homes preparing their children for school, and out of that grew the program Head Start. And in fact, one of the curriculums that was developed by Susan Gray, the Darcy curriculum, was one of the four curriculums used in Head Starts across the country. We also pioneered inclusive early childhood education downstairs in Susan Gray. One of the reasons why Kennedy came to Peabody was because we had been already training doctoral students in mental retardation, one of the few places in the country that it started to focus on people with developmental disabilities. And as a result of that 50-something years of training, some of the major thought changes, new ideas, new philosophies have been brought about by people who've been touched by the Kennedy Center, either folks who've been students or faculty here, who've done some postdoctoral work, collaborated with people here. It's a really impressive list of folks. And we've also been a leader in interdisciplinary and translational research since before they really knew what interdisciplinary and translational meant. And so when Eunice Kennedy Schreiber spoke and they named the National Institutes of Health after her, she made a point of saying that the Kennedy Center is the one that she sees as the ideal, the Vanderbilt Kennedy Center. So just to kind of get you oriented,
I'm not going to talk about every one of these, but imagine for 40 years we were this developmental disability research center, this one on the right, one-legged stool. And so we were here trying to do as much good as we could with our research arm. But then, in 2005, we added two other pieces, the University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities, which is an outreach arm, and then also our triad, which is that third leg, which does both research and outreach, just like the rest of the center.
As such, we are part of the AUCD network, Association of University Centers for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. And there are three pieces to that network: service, training, and research. We have all three of those pieces here at the Vanderbilt Kennedy Center. We're going to start with the research leg, and then we're going to move through the other two. So complex issues, so anything that's complicated as a human, needs more than one way to think about and look at human behavior and human development. So we have 204 researchers in 20 different departments who study things from molecules and transmitters and genes and brains all the way up through policy change and how to make a difference in people's lives. We group those into five areas. About half of our researchers are in developmental neurobiology and plasticity. So we also have people working in autism, communication and learning, mood and emotion, and family studies. Family studies is our latest addition. An example, we're one of the leaders in Williams syndrome in the country. We are also a National Institutes of Health Rare Disease Clinical Research Network for Angelman's and Prader-Willi. So that's kind of the overview of the research part. As a research center, we have core services that are designed to help researchers be more productive. Because if every researcher had to do each of these things on their own, it would be prohibitive and cost prohibitive, time prohibitive, not efficient. And so these core services allow our researchers to be more effective in gaining grants and in carrying out the grants that they get. So some of the services and resources include graphics and communication. I put a little blue dollar sign next to the things that sometimes cost. There may be a cost associated with them. So, for example, Kylie Beck in graphics is wonderful for posters, for flyers, for any sort of layout. If you need postcards or whatever your program might need and you really want it to look wonderful and very professional, that's who you go to is Kylie. And then our communications folks, including Jim Rosner, D. Courtney Taylor, and Amy Portier, and Nick Williams, they help make sure that we're communicating what we're doing. So if you need a news release about your study, or if you want to tell what you found in your study, and you need to convey that to the real people who are in your study, and not at the science level, but at the public level, they can help you make that transition and help get that information out. They can also help you with web-related things, if you need a web page for your study or something like that. In addition to facilities, operations, and reservations, we have meeting rooms like this one. There are a couple of others upstairs that we have parking places that are assigned to the Kennedy Center for Research. We have, if you need a phone, if you need help talking to parking people, whatever you might need in terms of space and making things work, Peggy Chatfield is your go-to girl. In grants and finances, Linda Dupre is, for the most part, your principal investigators are going to be dealing more with these folks. But sometimes you may be asked to ask questions or gain information from them. And Linda Dupre is more involved in putting the grant in. Nancy Huffman manages the finances of the grant. And Sue King does personnel. And so some of you may have Sue, if you're hired in any way through the Kennedy Center, or if you need to add a research assistant or something like that, she's probably going to be involved in helping you do that, unless you're using the services through your department. In addition, we also have technical support. John Tapp is sort of duly appointed in our technical division as well as in our statistics and methodology, and he's more big picture databases kinds of things. He's the leader of that group. And then Logan Lunger is our database specialist. And then Tony Muffin is our Max and video audio kinds of specialists. And again, there may be costs associated with their services. So if you have DVDs that you need to make several of, or you need to put together some sort of a movie for your particular stimulus for a particular study, that's the sort of thing they can help you with. The statistics and methodology methodology for, were good enough to send me some slides so that, they're representing themselves. And so we have 9 part-time consultants, and 8 of them are listed here. The other one that's not here is Warren Lambert, and you'll see him later. They all have different areas of expertise and are available to community center members and investigators and folks who work with them, students, to help with statistical issues. So for an example, several times a year they do trainings, and they always kind of have this look, this background looking like that. You can attend an hour training that they have at lunchtime, or you can go to an all-day workshop. If you have an idea for something you wish you knew better, then you can talk with Julie Taylor about that. One thing they're really good about is saying who's it for, beginners, intermediate, advanced, that sort of thing, so that can help you judge whether that's the right place for you. They also recommend that you take your problems to the BioStats Clinic, which happen Monday through Friday every day. It's several biostatisticians at each clinic. It's kind of a problem-solving, not embarrassed to say what I'm having trouble with kind of place, and then lots of great minds to work on it with you. And then Frank Harrell, who's the director, feels like that the biostatistics are there to serve and protect, and so he takes that pretty seriously. And he recommends don't let statistical mistakes weaken your research. So he suggests, again, attend a clinic. They also have an author checklist, statistical problems to document and avoid, and that's listed at that website. They also recommend that you do a consultation as you're planning. Earlier is always better than later, because then you didn't collect what you needed, you didn't see as many people as you needed, it's always easier to fix it early than late. So they recommend that if you have any sorts of ideas, even about experimental design, about how many groups you're going to have, or whether you're going to group versus continual, that sort of thing. And then they do recommend that you develop a long-term collaboration. So find the person who focuses on what you need and really get to know them and let them get to know your research so that they can understand your problems more easily when you bring them to them. You can also schedule an appointment. There's no cost. And Lily Lang is the person for BioStats. If you are working with observational data, John Tapp has several creative online tools, computer-based tools to use with observational data. Some of you may already be using Procode or Mooses, and he can also help with sequential analyses. And then if you're doing behavioral research, Warren Lambert can really help you with those kinds of psychology education, speech and hearing, multivariate studies that you may be working on. And I've worked with all 3 of them, and none of them will laugh at you if you ask a question. So those are some of the resources. I want to
remind you that you can find any of those resources using this quick guide. And this one says summer, so there'll be another one out in the fall. And on the back, it kind of lists them by the course, the way I went through them. So that's a great way to find out who does what and how to get in touch with them. And also, on the inside, it lists who all the different casing members are. So that's another way to make sure that you have one. There may be somebody working on your team that's a casing member that you can access services through that collaboration.
So that brings us to the family-friendly research approach. That's really very important to us here at the Community Center. And you are an important part of that, because you really are the smiling face of the Vanderbilt Community Center. When families talk to me out in public and they're saying, we saw so-and-so at the Community Center, and then they go on to say, and they were so good to us, or they were so nice, and that makes me so proud, because I know that it was one of you all that was good to them. That, you know, they don't spend as much time with the principal investigators. Who they spend the time with on the phone, in person, is y'all. And so you really are the difference in how people view us as a center. And so I want to let you know how much we appreciate what a valuable resource you are. And We've spent some time looking at this, and I just want you to know you're an important part of us. You may not have ever realized you were part of such a big entity, but we see you as very important. So in thinking about the family-centered research approach,
we have put together a tip sheet, tips and research sources for researchers. We have tip sheets on a lot of areas, but this one is researcher-focused. So I'm going to spend much time on that because I'm going to let you take this home. If you have any questions, let me know. I'll be happy for you to talk with you about any of those areas. This covers the idea of things to think about as you're scheduling and working with families before the visit,
it also, including things like privacy, convenience, and meeting their needs. It covers the research visit itself, including the ideals of caring and respect, comfort and security, again, making sure that you ask about meeting their needs. And then the follow-up, going above and beyond, making sure that they get connected to the rest of what might be useful to them that the Kennedy Center has to offer. And then the idea that if they took their time to come to us and help us get our research done, then one of the least things we can give them is helping them understand what it is we learned from their participation. So a study's not done until you've told the participants what you think. And so we really want to hit that hard, and we're here to help you get that done. Some other resources that may be useful to you include assessment. Yvonne Lee is our assessment specialist. We have a library of tests and assessment kits. She also does periodic trainings on new assessments or new editions of assessments. She also can do pilot. If you're trying to get some pilot data and you're trying to do it as we usually do pilot data, with as little as money as possible, then she can see a few children to help you get some pilot data, as she can serve as the psychologist on that project if you might need one. Also, in terms of outreach, if you have something that's going to involve, if you'd like to involve the larger community, Elise McMillan and Roxanne Carrion can help you with that. And then also Terry Urbano is our training director, and so if there's something you want to get out to the trainees and make them aware of that, or you have an idea of something you'd like to learn, she's a great person to talk with about that. So we're going to spend quite a bit of the next bit on our recruitment resources, try and tell you more about the kind of toolbox that we have to offer for you as you're trying to accomplish your tasks as a research team member. The Research Participant Recruitment Services are grouped in what we call 4E, and that just is a way of thinking about people who do some little things. Elizabeth Dykens is our core director. I'm part of it. Richard Urbano is Blake. He's our developmental epidemiologist and faculty database analyst. Dana Christina is the research coordinator for autism. Bob Crouch helps us by being a research liaison to metro schools. He also has good contacts in some of the other school systems. And then again, Elise McMillan helps us get out to the larger community. We're going to take a minute and go to the website so you can see some of the resources that are on our research website, our core service website. So again, here's that same list of people with live links, an overview. This tells more about what Yvonne does for the psychological assessment stuff. Links for how to ask for her help. The looming library of tests, there's actually a list of all the tests that are available to people in the Kennedy Center so that maybe your project doesn't have to buy that test because we already own it. And then this description tells more about what each test does. In thinking about recruitment, this is an overview of kind of what we offer. There's also a web link to my events list so that you can see This is the things that Burnett trying to get done in September. I'm not impressed. She's got a few things planned. Alright, so, I'm really looking for people in this group. That would be a good, I need to talk to her about making sure that she has plenty of my stuff for that event. So that's kind of a way for you to plan ahead and for me to plan ahead as well. Again, here's easy ways to get up with me and to get in touch with me. Here's more information about how to get a parking place, or there's also a community center car. So if for some reason you don't want to take your car to go pick up a participant, or because maybe you want to protect your privacy a little more than that, you can arrange to borrow the community center car and take it and go pick up a participant. In terms of developmental epidemiology and database recruitment, Dr. Urbano has very good connections across the state and has access to a lot of large-scale databases that we can mine for research information, as well as to get the idea of, I wonder how many people with X are in the records in this state. He can't tell you who they are or how to get in touch with them, but he can tell you how many there are. And there, you know, there's other kinds of database that's information that's available through birth and death records, through hospital records, not school records.
Not yet.
So if you're thinking about doing something large scale, he's also thought through every problem that's come up in that sort of thing, and he's already thought about how to do it so he can tell you. He's also a great guy for survey goals. Do you want to do an online survey, or do you want to not let people know that you do that? Okay.
Well, we may be using Redcap.
Well, all right, whichever one. And then, again, the community liaisons can help you get with the folks out in the community who are most relevant for the group that you're trying to attract for your study. Something new that we're going to do very soon. Nick Williams is our webmaster, and he's working desperately to get our new website up, and it's going to be gorgeous. And one of the things that we're going to hope to offer at that time is a request for services form, so that you can go through and say, this is who we are, this is what we're needing. It may give you some ideas that you hadn't thought about that you didn't realize you could ask. And so you can just go through click, and that will get to me, and then we'll start scheduling how we can help. So look for that in the near future. One of the major things that we use for recruitment is Study Finder. And again, this is going to look so pretty on the new website. It won't look like this anymore, so I'll have to change it. So we'll all get used to it. But Study Finder is a fairly effective way. We get between 400 and 500 hits a week average. So people are looking at it, and that's exciting. But it does require quite a bit of effort on the part of the family to check back over and over. And so one of the things that we've done is created Research Family Partners. And Research Family Partners allows families to say, I like doing research. I want to know what you're up to. If there's anything that would be right for us, you call us. And so they go online and they give us some information about themselves, the parent, and then the parent lists their children, or the individual just lists themselves. And then we can contact them when research might be right for them. It's been up about a year. We've got more than 300 people listed. And so very soon we hope to be able to start using that database. So some of the participant recruitment services that we can offer, we can do trainings like this, information, how do I do this? I'm happy to field those calls, because trust me, if your PI or your advisor has asked you to do it, probably somebody's already tried to do it before, and I may have an idea about what they did. Because somebody smarter than me has already figured that out, and they told me what they did. And if you need to get in touch with a different research project, I can help you do that. We really like to consult on recruitment during the planning phase of a study, because sometimes in the planning phase, you can say, that's not going to be motivating enough, or if you swapped it just this little bit, if you took this little bit of an angle on it, it's going to be much more appealing. And so during the planning, writing, and implementation phases of your grant project, if you are struggling with making your forms family-friendly or getting the language level well enough, or if IRB is fussing at you about the way you're saying something, call them, maybe I can help. Also, I can help you think about the community organizations. One of the things that I try to do is establish and maintain relationships with different community organizations so that I'm giving things to them, I'm helping them out whenever I can with the services of the Kennedy Center, so that when the Kennedy Center comes knocking and says, we want your help to recruit, they're going, okay, well, they've helped us and we'll help them. So that it's a more mutual relationship rather than us always asking and never giving. And so we try to do some of that. And then we also, I can also help you facilitate access to some of the other relevant databases like Research Family Partners and the Birth Record Database. I can also help recommend who you should talk to in communications about getting news release or about advertising. We started making sure that I have contacts at some of the major advertising places like National Scene and National Parent and places like that, so that we can get group rates, so that each of our studies advertises relatively rarely, but as the Kennedy Center, we advertise pretty often, and so we try to work with those different publications to recognize us as a frequent customer. So I can give you contact people and things like that. We're also available for support for writing, designing, and producing flyers, brochures, project websites, newsletters, reports on project funding. Again, that's in conjunction with communications for. We also do a lot of dissemination of research project materials, and that's a lot of what happens at the community events. And then I also help get projects listed on the Study Finder. One of the things that we do is, that I've started doing is what's called a recruitment plan, and it's a way of writing down how we're going to network around the study. Now, I know you can't see that, but the color coding is what I want you to see, is that we sit down and think of all the ideas that we can think of to recruit, and then we assign those to different people. Some of them are things I'm going to do because I already have that relationship. Some of them are things that the person in the study will do. So we basically think through it like this. We start with who you already have contact with. Who are those people that we already know and can see? How can we get the word to them? Who are other people at Vanderbilt who have contact with the people that I'm looking for? Who else sees children this age? Who else sees parents? Who else does, so that we can pass along and share? Sometimes we have projects where this particular project, their cutoff date for the oldest child goes right into the youngest child for this project. And so we try to get them coordinated and get them sending families. If you like being in this project, then you'll probably enjoy being in this next one. And just pass them right along through so that we get that, so that families are getting the most resources they can, and we're setting up that nice flow. Sometimes we also say, this project, the exclusions for this project are the inclusions for this project, so they kind of fit together as the opposite of one another. And so when this person gets a call and they're not right, they pass them over to this person. And that's sort of coordination. So we want to know who else is looking for those same people. And then we start thinking about where are the community places, groups, or other professionals who have contact with potential volunteers. Who are those folks? Who's likely to recommend this study? How can we get in touch with them and make sure that they know about it? And then lastly, we look at media options, including advertising, some new media like websites, chat rooms, things like that, and then also national websites, depending on the scope of your project, where we want to get things listed. So that's kind of how we think for our recruitment planning. One of the other things that we've done in the past is this was three different studies that all looked at the same group of children. And so families went three different places at different intervals. It was somewhat confusing. And so one of the things that we came up with was this graphic that helped families understand how the projects fit together and what that was going to mean for them. Again, there's nothing special about it, but if you need help with something like that, that's the sort of thing we've done before. We also have the Buzz Records database. It's Psychology and Human Development gets birth records from the state, and we have names of children who were born, names of their, and names and addresses of their parents. Then we have to find their phone numbers, and then they can be called or mailed. If we're looking, and generally, this is a typically developing group, and they have children as young as 3 months up through. They've been doing this for several years now, so up through 19 and 12 years old. And so I can help. This is basically there's an application to apply to get those. They do the splits August 20th, December 20th, April 20th. So that's, you kind of have to get your request in around those dates. So that we can help you do that. So that's kind of the recruitment part. So now let's look at the bigger picture. One of the things that we asked you to do was to think about how can you help families connect with our other resources. Because we may have been, if they've been in a research project with you, and you are able to say, and we also can tell you about this and this that can support your family, even when you're finished with us, that is, it adds value to your research project. And it is the right thing to do for families. Okay, so it's part of that caregiving follow-up. So most of our outreach side is under the University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities that started in 2005. And it involves training, technical assistance, research, and dissemination. And we have chosen to focus on education, early intervention, health and mental health, supports for individuals with DD and their families and adult projects, and recreation and arts. And one of those areas is going to connect up with something you're doing, because it's very much like the mission of the research side of our community center. We are one of 6 places in the country that's both a research center and a university center for excellence, so again, we're quite unique, and particularly in how closely we're interwoven. One of the best things about the USED is the Family Outreach Center. And so if you don't know anything else, this is one of the things that you're not sure what to tell them, send them to the Family Outreach Center. It's at 1810 Edge Hill, which is the street that runs out here, Edge Hill, and it's across the street on the edge of campus. You can actually park outside the building and walk in, which, as you know, is very appealing to families. Roxanne Carrion is a parent of a child with a disability, as well as a very informed person about the community center. And so she's there to really hold hands and help people find what they need. And so there's quite a few brochures about the family, flyers about the Family Outreach Center on the table back here. And I encourage you to pick one up. The table back there is set up like the ones that I would do at any event I go to. Okay. Depending on which event, it's going to be either fast food, more full. It's never going to be less full than that. But it's going to have more things displayed. And so if you're kind of wondering what that looks like, that's somewhat what it looks like. We also are able to pair with the Junior League Family Resource Center over at the hospital, and I have some brochures for the Junior League Family Resource Center at the back as well. Carol Labadoo is the person who is can be a counselor. And so the short version is, if they're crying, call Carol. And particularly if it seems beyond your comfort level to deal with. One of the best things that we have to offer and share with families is called Disability Pathfinder. And it's done in conjunction with the Tennessee Council for Developmental Disabilities. It's free information and referral. It's in English and Spanish. You can search by county in Tennessee, or by the service that you're looking for, or both. It's available online as well as by phone. I've got some quite a few brochures back there about that. If you don't put anything up in your waiting room or in your waiting area, or provide anything else for families, if you're going to reach families with disabilities, please give them that flyer, because they can find the rest of what they need with that. So please do that. We also have SIDS Saturdays. And these are special days about the SID. Too often, someone with a child with a disability feels like the child with a disability gets all the attention, and that's a reasonable way to feel. And so they get to come to this and talk about that or not, and play with other folks who do understand. And we have the October and December dates here. November and September are held off campus. We also work with the genetics clinic over at the Children's Hospital, as well as the Developmental Medicine and Cognition Department, which used to be the Center for Child Development. But it changed over the summer, changed names, and changed phone numbers. So if that's a phone number you need, you might want to get that. We also work with the Down Syndrome Clinic and the Fragile X Clinic. All are more medical focused on meeting the medical needs of the children with these specific syndromes, but also include they're very connected with the community center so that they're in the habit of making sure that they're learning about our resources. We also have a mental health treatment program. I'm told that the name is going to change soon. It's going to be called VTAC. But it, basically the idea is that adolescents and young adults with intellectual or developmental disabilities, that transition from school to adulthood is very tough transition. And so we're trying to help them get over that because they really put them at greater risk for developing depression and some other kinds of issues. And so treating that and dealing with that transition time is the focus of this clinic. We also have the Arts and Recreation Program. Since you came into the room, you've seen some of our art displays. We have four shows a year, and they are done by people with disabilities. We also have inclusive art workshops for people with and without disabilities. And if art is something you love, maybe you should let us know and come along on one of our inclusive workshops, and then we'll be seeing your work up on our wall. We also have tips and resources sheets. These are one page, front and back, what we know about best practices for about a particular subject, and it's written for the public. And so these are available again out in the lobby. When I'm out at an event, I have those available. There's about 2 new ones a month, and so they can be very useful, very much like, oh, and I wanted you to have this because it's great to know about. We also have a behavior analysis clinic, and it serves children from 3 to 22 who have a developmental disability through individualized behavior interventions and in-home support. It is fee-for-service, so that's something to make families aware of, but for many families, just finding that service is really important. We also have a reading clinic, and it's individualized reading tutoring for children with developmental disabilities or just extreme difficulties in learning to read. It is fee-for-service. There are some scholarships available. And again, it happens in a family outreach center. And Chrissy Young, there's a brochure at the back about that as well. We also have camps that happen in the summer. We have been having 3 transitions. These for individuals 16 and up who are, again, making that transition from school to work. It focuses on independent living and work skills. The social skills camp that Triad does is 6 to 22, and the music camp is for people 16 and up as well. Each of these camps looks to have a research component, and so if anybody that I'm in, any of those camps is a group that you're looking for, think about coming, let us know that you're interested in having a research interface, because we try to build research opportunities into every camp. We also have some initiatives under development. One is a program in disability, religion, and spirituality. Kicked it off last night with a movie called Praying with the Lord about a young man with Down syndrome who was preparing for his mitzvah. It was very well attended and a beautiful film. There are going to be several things going throughout the year, speakers and other events about this subject. We also have a post-secondary education program, Lifelong Learning Institute. Right now we have a tip sheet. There's a task force working on trying to put some things together. Within the year, we hope to have heard that we've received a grant to run a pilot program here. So again, that's something we're looking at. And we also have a program where we partner with the Mental Health Court of Davidson County in the state of Tennessee, trying to meet the needs of people with intellectual disabilities, a mental health problem, and substance abuse. And so out of that partnership has come a very special sort of halfway house that's designed to meet the needs of helping these folks work on each of these issues in a way that makes sense for them. So you can see that we, our artists have sort of shown you some of our multi-level partnerships across Vanderbilt with our Community Advisory Council, which is a statewide group that represents the community. We have lots of community partners who work with other state agencies. We really try to reach out and make as much connection as we can. Because of we're a University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities, we are now part of the Tennessee DD Network Partners. And University of Tennessee Bowling Center was the first, you said. And so they're in Memphis, and they're sort of medically focused, so we complement one another really well. And so if you are looking to recruit some people down in Memphis or try to get some connections in Memphis, there are Memphis connections. Disability Law and Advocacy Center helps protect the rights of people with disabilities across the state. And again, they have 9 regional offices, so it's a great way to reach out a little further. And the Tennessee Council on Developmental Disabilities is a statewide, is a state government position that really helps coordinate and funds projects across the state. These are some of our community partners, and so I would recommend that you visit that list on the website and take a look and say, oh, well, that's a really nice match for the people I'm trying to reach. So let's look into trying to work with them more closely. For example, the Rochelle Center is a workshop and employment place for people with disabilities. They have opened a bakery, and the delicious cookies that you had today were baked for us by folks in the Rochelle Center. We also take part in the Children's Mental Health Week, working with Tennessee House, Tennessee Voices for Children. We work with the National Area Association for the Education of Young Children and the Tennessee Early Intervention System on Need of the Young Child at this spring. This is part of how, again, this is an example of how we really are trying to make those multi-level partnerships work. And then the third leg of our group, of our three-legged stool from the beginning, is our autism piece. And most of the autism piece is done by Triad. And somehow, I didn't go into very much detail about that. But again, if you're working with that autism population, Dana Christina is your go-to person. So I wanted to talk a little bit about who's in the audience and kind of how your work is related to one another and how we might collaborate and support one another. So this is the audience.